from scratch, from scratch, from scratch, from scratch, from scratch.
Welcome to this week's From Scratch. I'm Martin Cousins and...
My name is Nigel Payne.
Well, dear listener, Nigel is bidding his summer retreat in Australia, a fond farewell, quite soon. So the next one will be from somewhere else in the world. It may be London, it may not be. But in the meantime, we're going to quickly pick your brains, Nigel, over your new book. You have just had published your third book. Now, for listeners who haven't been up to speed with all the books you've published, you first published The Learning Challenge.
Shame on them, Martin. Shame on them.
Indeed. But it's okay, everyone. I'm going to bring you back up to speed, so you don't need to feel that at all. The Learning Challenge, and then we had Building Leadership Development Programs, Zero Cost to High Investment Programs That Work. And on the 3rd of January, I believe, your latest book was published by a Kogan Page, and the book is called Workplace Learning, How to Build a Culture of Continuous Employee Development. I've got three short questions for you, Nigel. So this week, listeners, we're just going to have me quizzing Nigel about his new book. So the first question is, why have you decided to write about this topic and why now?
Good question. Very good question to start. I'll do them in the order that you've said. Why this topic? Because I've got more and more and more interested in the fact that learning per se is not enough. You can have the most brilliant people developing the most sensational learning and it falls on deaf ears and has pretty much zero impact. There is something bigger in the organization to do with the culture of the organization that I think makes a massive difference in terms of impact and self-generating learning and self-contained, self-generating learners. So I wanted to explore that. My books are all based around a problem that I encounter that I need an answer to. So the books are always finding an answer to a question. And the question was that, you know, how much impact does organizational culture have on the success of learning, and is there such a thing as a learning culture which is distinct from organizational culture? And why now? Because I think this becomes a burning question for the 21st century, that organizations need to buckle up, they need people who learn faster, who become more resilient, who embrace the kinds of challenges that most organizations are facing today. You know, you had Jaguar Land Rover on the news, loads of redundancies. Why? Because of the massive disruption in their industry, technological shift. They make diesel engines. No one wants diesel cars anymore, etc. The move to electric vehicles. So it's nothing that Jaguar Land Rover do wrong. Their cars are incredibly successful. It's just that the way they do business now is not going to be successful in 10 years' time. So they're preparing now. And what I want is a world where people accept that at work, work with it, embrace it, get something done. And now is the time, for sure. The term learning culture is being thrown around ludicrously in some instances. You know, people are claiming learning culture as a kind of fashionable add-on to their, you know, that they're offering. Oh yes, yeah, we're building a learning culture.
Yeah.
And what they understand by that can be completely ridiculous and not a learning culture. So the very least I wanted to do was pin it down and say, this is what a learning culture is. And therefore it's not a whole bunch of other things.
So come on then, can you give me a definition in a very short space of time around what a learning culture is?
I'll do my best. I think a learning culture is a culture in an organization where learning and work have become completely intertwined and where staff take it on themselves, not just to learn, that's only one part of it, but to share and to respond and turn learning into action. So, you know, the simple model I have is of this organizational gyroscope. I see learning in modern organizations like a gyroscope in an airplane. In other words, the gyroscope in an airplane keeps the plane, keeps the pilots informed where the horizon is. So it stops the pilots flying upside down by mistake, or flying into the sea or into the sky by mistake. It keeps everyone informed about where the horizon is. And I think learning does that. So the model I have is that stuff comes from outside, it comes in, it is processed, thought about, talked about, maybe understood locally, and then shared around the organization, and then action taken on the basis of that understanding and that knowledge. So it's an action model. It's not about people sitting staring at the ceiling having big thoughts. It's about how the organization reacts fast to changes in its external environment, and how the whole organization pulls together and shares their learning. So it's about sharing as much as anything else.
Okay, so
that's a bit long, I'm afraid, sorry.
So my final question, and I think that was a really good and interesting, and I think quite thought-provoking sense of what this is. And I think that that might be hugely challenging to lots of people in the profession.
Yeah.
Because the focus there, you know, the words I'm picking out is, you know, people learning for themselves, lots more sharing and being more action-oriented based on, you know, that collective learning and sharing. So my final question is, what is L&D's role in influencing and nurturing that culture? Because I presume that is what their job is going to become.
Yes, and I think those two words, influencing and nurturing, and I'd add a third, which are enabling. So in other words, part of L&D, if it wants to be successful, if it wants to be listened to, if it wants to have credibility and traction, its job is to nurture the conditions in which learning can flourish, rather than focus on the learning. So in an ironic way, a learning culture is more about the conditions of learning than learning itself. So I think that the L&D team are responsible for encouraging, supporting, and keeping that culture on track, and screaming loud and hard when things appear to be pushing it off track, and creating an environment where people want to learn and are pretty much self-motivated. They will build their own careers and build their own skills base because they know that is how they will survive in this kind of crazy world, not sit back and say, L&D, you teach me, you tell me what to do, you put me on a course, I'll do it, but I'll only do it if you tell me I have to do it, and I won't be very enthusiastic about the process. This is much more about flashes of insight, learning happening everywhere, all around, not about building, you know, big courses, although that can be part of it. But it's that getting that environment right where people can respond, engage, and feel completely committed to both the organization's skill base and increasing the organization's skill base, but also their own skill base, ensuring that they stay relevant and ensuring the place they work stays relevant. And keeping an eye on that horizon, because, you know, there are plenty of organizations that fly upside down or fly straight into the sea. You know, we can reel them off if we want to.
So your books I enjoy because they are written in a fairly journalistic way, I think. And, you know, I would like that. And you tend to talk about organizations and real people and real examples of how the topic is put into action. It is, you know, lived in the business. So I'm presuming that in this book you've taken the same approach. Yeah,
yes, it's true. Yes, I work through I do research. I do desk-based academic research because I think I have to have some evidence base and I have to have a context. So I go back to the early days of organizational culture and Edgar Schein and so on. I go back to Senge's fifth discipline and Bob Garrett's the learning organization. So I go back to the roots of the 80s and IGRIS when there was lots and lots of discussion and debate and it all seemed to just end unhappily, you know, by about 1995. And I asked why and what can we take from that early energy and what still needs to be done. Then I couple that with interviews with individuals who I think are real thought leaders and people who kind of understand what's going on in organizations. And then I do case studies of organizations. So there's always four or five case studies littered through the book. So to give some sort of tangible and realistic face to the theory, if you like. So instead of saying, this is the generic way a learning organization operates, I say, this is the way this organization operates. And as always, the case studies reflect very different aspects of what I'm talking about. They're not all clones of each other, and neither should they be. They've all worked it out themselves, worked out their own route through.
Right, Nigel, we've completely blown out one of our New Year's resolutions of keeping it to 5 minutes. But I think it was very well worth taking a bit longer to understand more about the topic and the book. So it's Workplace Learning, How to Build a Culture of Continuous Employee Development, and it's published by Kogan Page, and it's now available. So please do go and seek it out. It sounds like a very interesting read. So Nigel, thank you very much for doing that today.
It's a pleasure, Martin, as always, and thanks very much for three really good questions that should be asked about the book. And I hope people do read it, and I hope they come back to me and we have a continuing discussion over the next couple of years about what it's doing, what it does well, what it doesn't do so well, what's missing, and all the other stuff that I get comments on my other books. So thank you, Martin. It's been good to talk. From scratch.